Welcome to the My Favorite Girl Caregivers Corner podcast, where caregivers can come to be empowered, inspired, and strengthened to keep caring. I am your host, Priscilla Jean-Louis. Hey, hey, caregiver family. I am so grateful that you've chosen to listen to this episode of the My Favorite Girl Caregivers Corner podcast. If you've listened to the podcast before, I'd like to welcome you back for another care empowering, inspiring, and strengthening episode. If this is your first time listening, I say welcome and thank you too for listening. Hey, listen, if you haven't done so already, take a moment now to subscribe to the podcast from whichever platform you are listening on. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. I understand that Google Podcasts is going to be going away soon, but if you're on there now, you have a little while that you can still subscribe. And then, of course, you can also listen on my website at www.priscillajjeanlouis.com. And as always, I ask that you would go ahead and share it with your family and your friends, especially those who you may know that are serving as caregivers. I'd also like to take this moment to thank those of you who are following me via social media as I chronicle my journey with my mama, who I affectionately call my favorite girl. I invite you too to follow me on my social media platforms. You'll find me on Facebook and Instagram at My Favorite Girl and Alzheimer's, on YouTube at My Favorite Girl Caregivers Corner Podcast, and on TikTok at My Favorite Girl and Oz. Me and my lady, we have some real good times. We sit down, we chat, we do it all, we laugh. I have no idea a lot of times what she's saying, but I go right there into her world with her, and for her, it's all good, and for me, it's all good. So we share some of those things on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all of that. As well as some of those different posts that will motivate, educate, and inspire, can't talk today for whatever reason. But yeah, we share all of that on the platform as well for those that are caring, so that you can do just that, keep caring. And so enough about all of that. What I want to do at this point is just get on into the conversation that we're having. And so if you've listened to this podcast or have been following my journey, you know that my mother is living with Alzheimer's dementia. And Alzheimer's and any other form of dementia is a brain disease. And so oftentimes we will talk about physical health, mental health, even spiritual health, but few people consider or even mention the importance of brain health. And so on this episode, my guest and I, Ms. Whitney Scott, we're going to delve into that conversation. And today we're talking brain health. Whitney, welcome to the My Favorite Girl Caregivers Corner podcast.
Thank you, Priscilla, for having me. Hi, everyone. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. And so Whitney comes to us from the Tallahassee Memorial Memory Disorder Clinic. And the good thing about this clinic, if you are in the state of Florida, sorry, other states, I do hope you all are listening as well. But in the state of Florida, the Memory Disorder Clinic is all throughout the state. And Whitney's going to tell us a little bit more about that. I'm going to give space right now for you, Whitney, to just introduce yourself to the audience and let them know what it is you do.
Hi. So yes, my name is Whitney Scott. I am a clinical social worker at the TMH Memory Disorder Clinic. And the Memory Disorder Clinic is the TMH Memory Disorder Clinic is one of 17 clinics in the state of Florida. So that means wherever you are located in Florida, there is a memory disorder clinic located near you, whether it's in the same city or in that region, but there is a clinic near you. The clinic is funded by the Department of Elder Affairs as part of Florida's statewide initiative to combat Alzheimer's and to make Florida dementia friendly. The services we provide are short-term emotional support. We provide community referrals and resources and education and training and bringing awareness to dementia. And I think I said it, but our services are free because we're funded by the state.
All right. So that's always good. And you all know that one of the things, the other things that I like to do on this podcast is to bring those resources so that people know, you know, that's one of the things that I've run into a whole lot since I have had this platform and people have come to know me and just being a caregiver. I get calls a lot of times from people wanting to know what resources are out there. And one thing you know, Whitney, just in your job and just anybody, if you know anything about caregiving and just the load that it is, one of the things that is a big deal as well is finances. You know, there's most caregivers, the great majority of them are unpaid. They are family members, close friends who they're not getting paid. And the added expense that comes with caregiving, one of the things that all of us like to hear is the word free because you're shelling out, you're giving out so much
absolutely.
In so many other areas. So whenever you can find something that's free, that's like a big deal. That's a total mm-hmm. big deal. And so with the Memory Disorder Clinic, and I'm just looking here. So now the Memory Disorder Clinic and the Florida Brain Bank, explain that to us. What's the Florida Brain Bank?
So the Florida Brain Bank is actually what it sounds like is where you can, if you have dementia, Alzheimer's, another form of dementia, and you want to donate your brain after death for research opportunities, that's where the Florida Brain Bank comes in. And that also is funded. So it's just more of a research effort to look at the brain that has been impacted by Alzheimer's. I actually had a presentation today and I showed the group of the brain and also had a flyer for the Brain Bank, but it provides resources, resource material, education on if you were ever interested in donating your brain. And it also, so it's just really, and I mean, it is also just a lot of education as well. But if you are interested, they have, you know, they can provide you with opportunities and resources on how you want, if you want to donate your brain to something like that, if you have Alzheimer's dementia. Yes. And if you've ever seen a brain that's been impacted by Alzheimer's,
never ever.
It's something to see. It is. So
I mean, in person, you've seen one in person, or are you talking about online?
Well, we've seen one, like videos and different doctors have shown us, like, you know, but it's just like it shows like the brain how it deteriorates and how it shrinks over time with someone living with dementia. Florida Brain Bank, yes, it's different than the Memory Disorder Clinic. And of course, we're, you know, still funded, but it definitely, that's more for the research purposes that Florida wants to do with bringing awareness to dementia, finding a cure. And that's by getting the brain so they can actually see. Now we have this brain that's been, you know, the person's passed away, we have this brain, let's see what forms of dementia, like, you know, the frontal lobe has been damaged, the hippocampus is shrinking, like, you know, and people can decide if they want to do that. I personally don't know if there's anybody that we've seen that's like taking that on. Yeah, it's not when we have the flyers out at outreach events, it's normally the one that's not picked. So
okay. Yeah, because I you know, it's kind of like almost with organ donation, right? A lot of mm-hmm. people, for whatever reason, they're like, no, I'm taking my organs with me. Mm-hmm. And I will be honest in saying, you know, that was my attitude forever. Mm-hmm. Until, you know, you experience those situations, mm-hmm. you know, where you know people. My best friend passed away back in August, and mm-hmm. she was on the kidney transplant list, mm-hmm. needing a kidney. And so, you know, I'd even thought about and was considering, you know, testing to see if I could donate. But because I have an aneurysm on one of my kidneys, I knew that was not going to be, you know, they wouldn't have done it. But it does put it in perspective. Another friend of mine, dear friend of mine, her husband needed a liver. He was able to get that liver, but it helps you when you have those people that are close, where you realize that, okay, mm-hmm. you know, so it's kind of like organ donation, right? But mm-hmm. I would think that for the research purposes, mm-hmm. that would be you know, definitely I can't sit here and say that that's something I would say I would want to do. It just depends on how they do it, how they take it out, what you look like. You know, I don't know how they do all that, right?
So there's definitely, they definitely have, like, what they'll do is, like, let's say, for example, you, if someone has been diagnosed with early onset dementia and that opportunity or this information is like, hey, you know, you have an opportunity to donate your brain to the Florida Brain Bank. And, you know, they'll meet with you and they'll just kind of, like, let you know, like, this is what's going to happen. This is what we're going to do. This is like what, you know, and so they kind of just give you enough information to where you may feel comfortable doing this or kind of, you know, what's going to happen with the brain. And just like, what's even more is like when the person passes away and you have the family member has to make that call saying,
yeah,
the bank registered, like the person who registered for their, you know, they passed away. So now it's like, then they have to find out how they can get that brain from the hospital. And then the hospital, like, there's a lot in play. Like,
the team has to be, like,
contracted to. Yeah. It's a lot, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, we won't necessarily get that. That's a conversation for another day. But, you know, to be honest, I think that, you know, for the research purposes, because it's much needed, right? That's the only way they're going to find the answers to some of these questions that are there. If you have somebody with it that actually donates their brain so they can take a look. And so that's very interesting. I mean, I knew about it. I just have never delved into that because when I spoke with Sunny before, Sunny was there at the memory disorder clinic. We talked about a different side of it, never really got into that, but definitely going to look at that a little bit closer as well. That may be another podcast. Who knows?
Yes.
But I think that's very interesting. And so the memory clinic, you are in 13 counties.
Yes.
Okay. 13 counties throughout Florida. So I see that there is one in Pensacola. Of course, the one here, there's one in Jacksonville, one in Gainesville, one in Orlando, one in Melbourne, one in Clearwater, one in Tampa. So there's a whole lot going on. All right. So this information, and they're all free. So let's walk me through that. And so they're free. At what point, right, would I contact the memory disorder clinic to, you know, look at some of your services? What type of concern would I have to have about my memory before I come and say, hey, I have this going on. How can you all help me?
So we really, really stress the importance of early detection. Something that I tell, I'll give an example. So today at a presentation, I was talking to someone. I was like, you know, we notice, for example, if we are just doing a simple closing the door or maybe opening the refrigerator, something, a simple task, and you feel like you're out of breath. You feel like every time you move, every time you're short of breath, right? And that would give you urgency as to what's going, like, something's wrong with me. I need to call a doctor. It's the same way if you start noticing changes in your memory. If you start, you know, you may forget to the stove, turn the stove on, or if you may, you know, you're driving somewhere, all of a sudden you don't remember where you're going and you've driven this route many times. So when you start noticing changes in your memory, it's when we encourage you to reach out to us right away. Or if you want to reach out, you know, to your doctor, but we definitely encourage, like, any sign of changes in your memory to do it, to contact someone right away. The earlier you can, you know, earlier you can get resources, get help, the better we can, you know, see, we can maybe catch it. If it is dementia or mild cognitive impairment, we can catch the early onset versus waiting till it gets to a point where now you need further assistance. And now it's to the point where your family's having to step in. And now it's to the point where you're unable to drive anymore. So we really, really stress the importance of the sooner the better. Like, that's the motto.
So do you all find that a lot of people that come in, they are further along as opposed to that early detection? Because what I noticed and what I realized just in different ones that I've talked to, a lot of times people are in denial. It happens, but they don't, either they don't acknowledge it or they don't really realize that it's happening, right?
And that is exactly denial. That is where we run into. And It's sad because it's like, you know, people will come in and they will say, well, I noticed my mom or my dad or my husband, wife, I've noticed that they were forgetting things more, but I just thought, you know, maybe it was just maybe stress or maybe, you know, older age. And it's like, you know, had we got to them maybe 6 months or a year ago, we could have maybe gotten them to a place where we could have provided resources in time. And now it's like, it's too late. So there is a lot of denial that like hinders people from taking that step forward to contacting us and then waiting as it progresses. And that's even from the care support family member, as well as the person itself. You know, we have people that come in and there was like, well, yeah, I know my memory was started losing. I could remember things years ago, like I used to, and now I'm just finding myself not remembering this and that. And it's like, well, why didn't you come in? Oh, I just figured that, you know, it was just something that would come back in time. And it's like, it's something you didn't want to address. And so okay. It's like, you know, when we hear about memory loss, hear about dementia, people, it is something like, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose my memory. But I always tell people, doesn't mean you're going to lose it overnight. You know, right. It is something to be concerned about it, but there are things now, and this kind of will go into the six pillars of health, or what I like to say, the ways to love your brain. But there are things you can do to reduce the risk of further cognitive decline. Not saying it's not going to happen because, you know, it's dementia, but there are things that you can do to reduce further, like rapid decline.
And I think the important thing with that too is for people mm-hmm. to understand that just because you're having some type of memory loss does mm-hmm. not necessarily mean that it's a dementia diagnosis or exactly. any other form of Alzheimer's. It could be something else. And of course, you know, we'll talk about that getting into the six pillars, but mm-hmm. we don't want people to be too afraid mm-hmm. to go and get checked, you know? And so the other question before we get into talking about the six pillars, if I come in because I realize I'm having some type of memory loss, mm-hmm. what is it that you all do in the beginning? How do you help people when they come into your office saying, hey, this is happening, what do I do?
So there are two ways that we can do this. The first thing is, so of course, every memory disorder clinic is associated with a hospital or a medical center. So we are a part of the TMH neurology practice. That's who we're associated with. So it could be either you call your doctor and you let them know I'm having some concerns about your memory. Your doctor would then refer you to our neurologist, and then our neurologist will perform a MoCA or a MMSE exam to determine, you know, what your cognitive functioning is on the baseline. And then he then may order an MRI or another brain scan to see if there's any damage to the brain. And then he'll have you meet with a social work team, which is where we will give you some education and resources that may be beneficial to you. So if you're waiting, you know, this is your first appointment and you really could use some support, well, let me refer you to the Alzheimer's Project, or let me refer you to another agency that could provide you some support, a support group. Let me give you some information about things you can do, like to change your lifestyle, healthy eating, dieting, you know, reducing sugar, exercise to help you. So that was from a neurology standpoint with a basic referral. Then this is where I tell people, you also can call us without having to even go to the neurology route. Because we are funded by the state of Florida, our services are free. We're open to the community and the public without being a patient. So I had someone call a while back and was like, hi, I see you guys do free memory screenings. I wanted to know if I could come in. I have some concerns. Okay, sure. Let me put you on the social work schedule. They'll come in. We'll perform a MMSE, which is a mini mental state examination, and we'll perform that test. And we can tell you then, this is where your score is. Now we do let people know, we cannot just say, oh, well, you scored a 23 out of 30, so you have dementia. We cannot do that, but we can give you this information. And then we recommend you calling your doctor and let them know, I had an exam by the memory disorder clinic. This is what my score is showing. I would like to meet with you to further discuss this. So there are two ways that you can meet with us, whether it's through the referral route, which is going through the doctor and then being referred to the neurologist and then meeting with us, or just calling us without having to go through the doctor process and then meeting with us And then we perform the examination. And then if you just want some education, like, hey, you know, Alzheimer's runs in my family. Do you have any information, some educational resources that I can look at? Or I have a loved one that I've been taking care of and I really could use some support. Then we're like, sure, like, let's get you some referrals to the community. Let's get some help for you. So there are different ways and avenues that we can meet with patients through.
All right. So Whitney just put that information out there. So I want to give you her contact information. You can reach her at the TMH Memory Disorder Clinic at 850-431-9008 or at Whitney, WHITNEY.Scott@TMH.org. And so if you need to, take advantage of these services, please do not be afraid to walk into the clinic and mm-hmm. do just that. Give her a call and, you know, let them get it set up. Now, I will also throw this plug in there as well. For those of you that are following me on social media, we will be myself, My Favorite Girl in Alzheimer's, in partnership with Kaylin's Caring Connection. We will be hosting a one-day Alzheimer's Awareness and Education Conference on June 22nd, and Whitney and her team will also be there, and they will actually be conducting some of these free screenings right there mm-hmm. on site. So you want to be able to come and take part in this information. If you have an inkling that you may want to just have a screening, they're private screenings. Mm-hmm. And so they'll be on hand at the conference. The conference is going to be held at Destiny Church, and I'll give more information regarding that as well at the end of the podcast. And so definitely let's take advantage of that. So Whitney, let me ask you one additional question, right? So if I go to the neurologist, mm-hmm. now I know the clinic part is free, but seeing the neurologist, that would be through the insurance, and then the neurologist would refer to you all, right?
Yes, ma'am. So we actually see the new patients the same day as they see the neurologist. Gotcha. So they'll see the neurologist, let's say, for example, at 8 o'clock, and then we'll see them at 9. So the neurology appointment will, of course, be billed through insurance, but seeing the social worker will be free. There won't be any charge.
Okay. So, you know, and this is just me in my opinion and my thing, right? Mm-hmm. At least with my mom's doctor, mm-hmm. I have not, and this is her current doctor as well as her previous doctor. What I found is that general practitioners really don't seem to know and understand the signs and the symptoms, in my opinion, as well as I feel like they should, right? And then I also know of at least one person who has gone to neurologist and have had the exam and literally has all of the symptoms and the signs of dementia or some type of Alzheimer's and didn't get that diagnosis. And so, you know, I think I'm 8 years in. Right. I'm 8 years in caring for my mom. In addition to that, you're talking about multiple family members, grandparents, aunts, uncles, my mom's siblings. So I've seen this a whole lot. And mm-hmm. so to see it and kind of know what it looks like and to know and to understand that you actually have a neurologist that's saying not Alzheimer's. So what else could it be if it's not a form of dementia when they are displaying literally these same behaviors?
I'm very curious. It'll be something off camera, but I'm very curious to see, to know, or just kind of gather like who they talk to, because there are other factors that can contribute to memory loss. I just don't think they are that extreme if they're causing those type of symptoms and like dementia related symptoms.
And that's my thought. That is exactly my thought. And, you know, even down to the meds that were given were the same meds that you would prescribe for, you know, at least with my mom anyway, some of the same meds. So at any rate, that's a whole different conversation. But so, ultimately.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I just was going to make real quick something that we do very, very encourage people here in the clinic. And I'm like this in my personal life, and I'll tell this to my family. Always get a second opinion. If you're unsure, if you feel like you may or that your concerns are not being validated, if you feel that you may be misdiagnosed, because if a neurologist is not sure, the next step would be to refer them for a neuropsychological exam, where they'll meet with a neuropsychologist and undergo a 4-hour exam to determine if there's any other factors psychologically that are affecting the brain that could, you know, mimic those symptoms, those behaviors, as well as undergo a brain scan to see if there are parts of the brain that may be affected. So there are additional steps that a neurologist is supposed to take if they feel like they're not sure whether or not, you know, it is dementia or something else. But definitely, anyone who's listening, always advocate for yourself. No one knows your body more than you do. And always advocate for yourself, and you always can ask for a second opinion. Like, hey, I would like to be referred here. I would like another referral. And you'll call your primary care doctor. And you said something earlier about the general practitioners, and we do see a lot of that. A lot of those general practitioners do not like talking about dementia.
They have no clue. Like my mom's doctor, that's probably going to be another podcast. Seriously. Mm-hmm. My mom's doctor and they're, you know, I have gotten to a point where I don't even take her in until it's time for her to be seen, because one, I'm already annoyed at the fact that she's your patient. Mm-hmm. And when I have an appointment scheduled, you call me because absolutely my number is the one that's in the file. Mm-hmm. I'm the one that scheduled the appointment, but you will call me or call my phone and ask to speak to her. And it annoys me every time, because I'm saying, okay, she is your patient. You know that not only does she have Alzheimer's, but she's at an advanced stage. And so you're going to call and ask to speak to her. And then when we get there, there's always this long waiting period. Mm-hmm. And if you know anything about Alzheimer's, dementia, they do not, being in, first of all, you're in a different space. And so that's already confusion. And then to have that confusion, and then you want me to sit there for 30 minutes and wait for a doctor. And I fuss every time. I mean, good fuss. So, you know, I don't go off on the people, but, you know, I try to help. Matter of fact, the last appointment I took her to, I actually have some of the Alzheimer's signs and symptoms cards and all that. So I took a stack of them with me, and I literally gave them to the person sitting at the front and told them, hey, I would really appreciate if you all would read these and familiarize yourself with them, and then sit the rest of them out on the table so that other people that come in can also get the information, because it's evident to me that they have no clue. The office staff, I think that they all need to be trained to be able to see and understand what it looks like. But that's a conversation for a whole other day.
We can definitely talk about that, because that is something that something that we've been trying to implement within the hospital is to make TMH a dementia-friendly medical institution, because not everyone, no matter what scrub color, not everyone is aware of how to respond to someone who has dementia, knowing the signs of someone with dementia. Like, so we're working on whether it's like a health stream, you know, going into your health stream and watching videos, or doing a training, some type of training that you can, so where you can get that knowledge to understand that, you know, you have a someone that's checking in with dementia, you know that they cannot wait 30, 40 minutes to be seen by the doctor.
Exactly. Like,
there needs to be some type of support in place. So there's definitely, even here in the healthcare, there definitely needs to be more training. Absolutely.
Yep. And you know, I go up to the Capitol and help legislate every year. And I promise you, it is on my agenda to even talk with those that are, you know, writing up these bills. That this is one, you know, we just got the one, thank God. One passed for the police officer, the training for the police officers, which is very important because you have to know how to de-escalate and not escalate a situation when you, you know that someone has dementia, but you got to first of all be able to recognize it. And so that was definitely a big deal for us this year in advocating for that bill. And so one thing, I mean, and it's exactly what you said, there's a lot of spaces that have to become dementia friendly, whether it is doctor's offices, restaurants. And I know that there are some restaurants that, you know, they're realizing more and more. So anyway, back into this conversation. So great information. So what I want to go over into is to let's talk about those pillars there that we're talking about, because when you think about brain health and what we can do to ensure that our brains are healthy. When we talk about health, you got to know that if something is healthy, there has to be an unhealthy side. And so let's talk about that unhealthy side and what it is we can do, because we'll go to the gym all day to get, you know, our physical bodies. You know, the guys want the muscles, and you know, anybody who wants the muscles, they'll go work out and all of that. You know, spiritually, we do what we have to do to make sure that we are spiritually healthy. And now we're in a society where mental health now matters more than it ever has before.
Yes.
So we'll take steps to make sure that mentally we're in a good place. But we want to do the same thing when it comes down to our brains. And so let's talk about those things that we can do to make sure that, you know, we love our brain, as you say.
Absolutely. So I'm going to just briefly go over the six pillars of health. And they just kind of, these are brain activities, things that you can do in your everyday life that can help maintain your brain health, as well as reduce your risk of developing dementia. So just a disclaimer, there is no cure for Alzheimer's. There's no cure for dementia, but there are things that you can do to reduce the risk of developing dementia. Or even if you've been diagnosed with a mild cognitive impairment, there are things that these things you can do to reduce further rapid decline. So the first is being social. So what we like to do here in the clinic, when we meet with our patients or anyone, you know, that we interact with, the first thing we do is ask them a couple of questions. We assess their protective brain factors. Do you socialize with your friends and your family? Do you participate in activities at church? Or, you know, what do you do to stay socially active, to stay socially engaged? According to the Alzheimer's Association, social engagement is the number one key factor in helping in reducing the risk of cognitive decline. Because when you're conversating with other people and engaging in conversations, that is a stimulation to the brain. So we definitely encourage, we have our seniors that come in here. We encourage them to go to the Tallahassee Senior Center. You know, they have locations all throughout Tallahassee. We have locations in Gadsden and Wakulla and Jefferson County, the rural communities. But going to the senior center, for example, and participating in some of the activities and getting to meet new people or participating in church, going to church or family members, just being socially engaged is one of the six pillars of health that we encourage. And we also talk about engaging your brain. So something as simple as listening to a podcast is a part of engaging your brain. So listening to this is a good example. Also reading a book, even if you're reading a hard copy book or your Kindle, doing crossword puzzles, reading the newspaper, those things that you're doing to engage your brain, to keep your brain sharp, are is another good tool to help reduce the risk of developing cognitive decline. And then we also talk about stress. So Priscilla, you mentioned a few minutes ago about that there are some cases where people may have memory loss, and it's not always dementia, and that's true. So that's where we encourage people to, if you notice changes in your memory, we don't want to automatically assume it's dementia right away. We need to evaluate you to see if there are other factors. So for example, if you are overwhelmed, if you're feeling stressed, if you are suffering from some form of depression, these things have been linked to memory changes.
Okay.
And so we encourage you to find coping mechanisms. If you are feeling stressed or overwhelmed, we encourage you to find healthy coping mechanisms, whether it's, you know, going out for a walk or talking to a counselor, a therapist, just something to help reduce your levels of stress, because stress can impact your memory and can cause memory loss. Doesn't mean it's dementia, but it can cause some changes in your memory. So we very encourage people to find healthy ways to combat stress and reduce stress levels. Exercise is also a great one. So we do encourage people, whether you're young or old, to be active, whether it's a 15-minute walk a day, whether you're doing shared exercises. I know at the senior center today, they were doing some shared exercises where they were literally just, you know, moving their legs and arms, but they were being active. Exercise has been linked to reducing the risk of cognitive decline. And then lastly, which is also goes back, Priscilla, about sleep. So we definitely encourage you to get plenty of rest. And I say that because sleep apnea is something that can cause memory changes. So
more and more cases of that too. I've seen more cases of that over the last 2 years than ever.
Yes. Yeah, so what happens, especially when we get people that come in and they're a little bit younger than what we are seeing more younger cases, maybe late 40s, early 50s, mid 50s of cases of people being diagnosed with early onset dementia. But we also are seeing cases where people are coming in, they're having what they call brain fog and memory changes. And we ask them, well, how many hours of sleep are you getting? Oh, about 4 to 6 hours of sleep. And then we also refer them to a sleep study, which shows they have sleep apnea. And so once the sleep apnea is treated, once they're using a CPAP and they're sleeping better, then they report to us and tell us that those memory concerns they had are no longer there. So making sure you're getting adequate rest. Average
time for sleep? I know there's a lot of different ones. So how much sleep should I be getting every night?
According to research, it says 8 hours of sleep, but I think most Americans are getting between 5 and 8, honestly. I know for me, I'm getting at least 5 to 6 hours of sleep, which, okay. I mean, I feel well rested during the day, but by late afternoon, by 4 or 5 o'clock, I'm yawning. Mm-hmm. Like I'm tired. Right. I don't have any more energy in me. But someone in this, you know, it's kind of talked about the caregivers, and I know you can probably relate to this as well, but people who are caregivers and they have loved ones with dementia who are, you know, up at night, you know, wondering, not getting sleep. And so, you know, we have caregivers that come to us and they were like, I think I'm having memory loss. I'm not remembering things like I used to.
Because
they're tired and they're stressed out. And we tell them, you know, you may not necessarily be having memory loss. You have a memory loss, but it's not related to dementia. It could be because of your circumstances where you're tired, you're stressed out. You know, so those are key factors that we definitely try to encourage. And I think, actually, I do have one more. I'm sorry. Eating right. So this is something that I'm kind of taking on a little passion project here. But research has shown that a Mediterranean diet is the best diet that the Americans should be partaking in, which is like whole grain foods, lean foods, fruits and vegetables, you know, just all the leafy green, all the pretty things on the food pyramid. And we should avoid things with processed foods, sugar, carbs. So eating right has been linked to reducing the risk of cognitive decline. And so something that we are hoping to do with the clinic, we kind of talked about it, but we really would like to maybe send out recipes like Mediterranean dishes or just simple things that you can cook that are healthy eating for people, as well as, you know, because we do know that food costs are high, you know, groceries are high and things like that. So there may be some people who can't afford to buy some of those things, but at least maybe seeing what the farmer's market or Second Harvest can do to get those resources to people, because eating right can be linked to you know, just a better overall quality of life and success. So not only will you feel good eating right, but you also will have a more sharper cognitive, you know, functioning wise. So those are the pillars of health that we, or what I call the ways to love your brain. But just like doing those things can help. And like I say, it doesn't mean that you know, unfortunately, you may still, and you know, over time may end up developing. However, you have a higher chance of reducing the risk of development by doing those things to keep your brain active and healthy.
And from my research and what I understand as well, you know, even in going in line with eating right, you know, when you have diabetes, high blood pressure, some of the other things, it increases your risk. It's kind of like with most things, right? So you really do have to be on top of making sure that you keep your blood pressure under control. You're keeping your blood sugar levels under control, because all of these things as well are factors. And, you know, same thing with the exercises. When you're exercising and a lot of these other things, but exercising helps to, you know, build those brain cells. It helps to the brain cells to, you know, increase, if I'm saying that correctly, Whitney.
Yes.
And so, you know, we want to be able to get into that, because the thing with Alzheimer's and the other dementias, it is your brain cells that are dying. There's these amyloid plaques that attach to the brain. And they kill the brain cells, basically. And I often describe it as like plaque on your teeth. If you've seen people have a plaque buildup, and I know
that's exactly what the brain is,
but that's exactly what happens with the brain. These plaques build up, and as they build, they kill the brain cells, and it continues to grow and grow until, you know, the functioning is no longer there. And so we want to be able to do those things. And I will tell you, you know, I fall in line that stress. I'm having to do a better job at managing my stress, and that eating right, well, actually eating right, exercise, all of it. I'll go, you know, what I've tried to do is find ways that I can help to minimize stress, find those things. So I've gotten into like cooking. I will cook. I don't know if I'm completely there where I will say I absolutely love to cook. I just will cook. Cooking has become a de-stressor for me. I like to make sure that my children and, you know, they eat well and that they enjoy what they're eating. And so cooking has become one of those things that I've developed you know, I'm developing a love for it. I have a love-hate relationship with it. Sometimes I love to do it and sometimes I hate to do it.
I understand. Same here.
Exactly. I've gotten into photography. And so what I try to do at least a couple times a week, we have a lake out here. So I walk down to the lake with my camera. I take pictures of the flowers. I like nature. I'm a nature photographer. I take all pictures, but I really love taking pictures of nature because when I take those pictures, I feel like I get to see the creativity of God.
You do.
It's like a soothing for me. It's a stress, you know, reliever. And so what I've learned to do is to find ways that I can manage, because I am a solo caregiver. My mom is at a more advanced stage of Alzheimer's. And so bath time and just being up at night, right? I keep my camera on so that I can see her, and I keep the volume on so that I can hear her. And so, you know, when you're being awakened out of your sleep a few times a night, you don't get rest. And so I know of late, I have been, you know, dealing with just the stress, and just, I think a lot of it is just being tired, right? So I'm learning how to manage that. But, you know, I think that these things, if we do them, and oh my gosh, being social,
yes.
You know, and sometimes, you know, for those caregivers, if you're out there and it's just you, I get it. Trust me. I absolutely get it. I've learned that I mean, I really don't. I don't even really make plans to do a whole lot because, you know, when you don't have coverage, it's like I'd rather not make plans than to make them and get disappointed because they fall through. And so if I make them and I get to do whatever I want to do, it's great. And if I don't, then I'm like, it's okay because I didn't set myself up for it, if you want to say it like that. So, you know, there's a whole lot in here that all of us can do, but more than anything else, I want to make sure that people understand, you know, what this looks like and the fact that these services are, they're free. And you've already given us a lot of your role
Thank
at the
you.
clinic. So I'm going to ask this question for you because you've been in this role for how long?
September of 2023, 7 months, I believe.
Okay. So in 7 months, just want to ask you, working at the memory disorder clinic, what would you consider to be your most rewarding part of your job?
My most rewarding part is being able to provide support to your caregiver.
Okay.
And also, what I like to do is once a, you know, if a caregiver reaches out to me, if I meet a caregiver in the clinic and I provide them with resources, I like to follow up with them, you know, a few weeks later just to kind of check in, see how things are going. And I love being able to hear, well, you know, thank you for this resource that I got in this, or I feel much lighter. So to me, it's just being able to offer support to your caregiver. I will tell this, when I graduated with my master's in August, working in anything geriatric aging was not really something that I just never saw myself doing, because geriatric social work was never something that was really discussed in school, right? And you know, now that I'm working in this field, I'm really trying to push FAMU and Florida State, and which is my alma maters, but I'm really trying to push other schools to like encourage this in social work for more social workers to go into working in the aging population. So when the position became available to me about the memory disorder clinic, I was like, you know, I didn't really know anything about Alzheimer's. All I know is that my great grandmother passed away from Alzheimer's and my great aunt passed away from Alzheimer's. So I knew that there was like a risk possibly with my, you know, my side of the family. And so I really didn't know anything about it. But since working here, I can tell you that this is something I want to continue working in the aging population, specifically with dementia and offering support to caregivers. Just seeing the caregiver burnout and seeing the like, I'm always every time I read any data showing the unpaid caregivers or how many hours of caregiver, I'm like in complete shock. So, you know, just being able to offer support, you know, I tell the caregivers, I'm like, if you just need to call and vent, do that. I've had people just call and talk. I don't say anything. I just listen to them, like, you know, because they just need someone to talk to. And just, yeah. So just honestly, my most rewarding part is really just offering some type of support to the caregiver because they're the ones that are, you guys are the ones that are dealing with it all, especially the ones who are solo like you. And, you know, I have my ones that I have my loans caregivers.
I'm gonna edit that part. That was my work phone. I did not realize it was gonna ring like that. I thought I put everything on mute.
It's okay.
What I'm gonna do is
It's
I'm gonna log out of every last one of them. So
okay.
I can't I didn't realize it. Anyway, I will be editing all of that. But definitely, you know, this being a caregiver is nothing light. And you know, I appreciate that, right? I appreciate the love that you have developed for it because you don't have a lot of people who really like to take a lot of time from heart, from their heart to deal with that aging population. And like you, as well as myself, we all seem to have known somebody or know somebody who has Alzheimer's. I know we were, Crystal and I, with the Alzheimer's Association, we were at a health fair a couple weeks ago. And as people were coming by the table, I would ask, like, hey, do you know anybody who has Alzheimer's or had it. Mm-hmm. And you always get those answers like, well, yeah, I know my grandmother, so-and-so. And so then you ask them, well, how much do you know about it? Nothing. Like, they know nothing. Mm-hmm. But it's not, you know, it's not something that's abnormal, right? Because a lot of times we really don't start to look at things or research things until it's front and center with us, right? When it becomes front and center, then we want to know everything we can know. At least we should.
Yes.
Want to know what we need to do, what help is out there, what have you. And then there are some who really don't. And I mm-hmm. try to encourage people to learn as much as you can, whether it's you or someone that's dear to you. You know, my friend that passed away, she had polycystic kidney disease. I've never in my life heard about polycystic mm-hmm. kidney disease ever. But I took the time to learn all of it so that I know what it looks like. How can I best help her in this yes. situation? Right. Yes. And that's what you want to do. And I would encourage anybody out there, this podcast, as I often say, it's not just for Alzheimer's caregivers. That just happens to be mm-hmm. my stance and what I do. But this podcast is for every caregiver, no matter what who you're caring every for, caregiver. What their manner of disease or issue is. It's for all caregivers because the mission is to help empower and inspire all caregivers. But one thing I do encourage people to do is to research, educate yourself. Educate yourself on what it looks like, what it is. You want to know the signs, the symptoms. You want to know, you know, if they're taking meds, what type of side effects
yes.
could be related to this? Why? Because if they start displaying behavior, sometimes we as humans can become so personal when it comes to certain things, not realizing that in reality, it's not always the person. It could be the medication they're on. It could be the stress that they're under. There's different factors. And we're so quick to just, you know, jump on the person and say, oh, they would. No.
Yes.
So if you educate yourself,
yes,
there's not one medication that I will ingest in my body mm-hmm. without reading all of the side effects. Mm-hmm. And I will be honest in saying that if some of those side effects don't agree with my thought pattern at the time, mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to take the medication. I'm guilty.
Same way. You have to know what you have to know what you're putting into your body.
Right. Now, disclaimer, please take your medication. Please.
Yes.
I meant to say it behooves you to just mm-hmm. know, educate yourself so that you can understand fully what your person that you are caring for is dealing with. It makes life easier for you and it makes life easier for them because they don't have to explain mm-hmm. everything to you. Whitney, great conversation today. Very, very good conversation. I certainly appreciate you taking this time to share this information with our audience. And I want to be able to give this information again for those of you that are in Florida and you would like more information, would like to speak with Whitney more, you can contact her again at the TMH Memory Disorder Clinic. Give her a call at 850-431-9008, or you can email her at whitney.scott@tmh.org. You can also visit my website at www.priscillajjeanlouis, that's priscillajjean-louis.com. You can visit the website and go to my resource spot. There is a resource spot on there, and Whitney's information is also located there on my website. So this has been a great conversation, and we look forward to those of you that are in the Tallahassee, Leon County, Gaston County, Jefferson County. You're in this area. We look forward to seeing you at the Alzheimer's Awareness and Education One Day Conference that's being held on June 22nd. You'll get more information regarding that at the end of this podcast. So make sure that you stay tuned to get that information. And so, Whitney, certainly appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
All you do, appreciate your help, you thank and your you. Team there at the Memory Clinic. And thank you for a wonderful, wonderful podcast. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Priscilla Jean-Louis.
And I'm Kaylin Jean-Louis.
We're not just a mother-daughter duo.
We're caregivers. That's right. We've walked this journey together, supporting each other every step of the way. And today we're here to talk to you about something that affects millions of families across the country, Alzheimer's disease.
In Florida alone, nearly 580,000 individuals age 65 and above are living with Alzheimer's. And behind each one of them, there's a network of caregivers like us providing love and support. But being a caregiver isn't easy. It's a journey filled with challenges, uncertainties, and often feeling alone.
That's why events like the Alzheimer's Awareness and Education Conference on June 22nd, 2024, hosted by yours truly, are so important.
It's not just about raising awareness, it's about providing support, resources, and guidance to those who need it.
Many of those affected are right here in our Sunday congregations. They're our neighbors, our friends, and even our family. Too often, they struggle silently, unaware of where to turn to for help or how to recognize the early signs and symptoms.
But that's where we come in. At this event, we're giving our faith-based community a chance to come together with organizations that specialize in Alzheimer's care and support. And the best part, free respite care will be available so caregivers have an opportunity to fully engage in the event.
So whether you're a caregiver, someone living with Alzheimer's, or simply someone who wants to learn more, we invite you to join us on June 22nd.
Together, we can raise awareness, offer support, and make a difference in the lives of those affected by Alzheimer's disease.
Because when we come together as a community, there's no challenge that's too great to overcome.
For more information or to register for the conference, visit www.priscillajjeanlouis.com or call 850-459-5397. We look forward to seeing you there. Thank you again for listening to this episode of the My Favorite Girl Caregivers Corner podcast. I'd also like to invite you to visit my website at www.priscillajjeanlouis.com. There you'll find more information about me and my journey with My Favorite Girl. There's also the resource spot where you'll find many resources to help you as you are on your journey. Hey, stay connected. And remember, no matter what, keep going, keep pushing, keep loving, and by all means, keep caring.